so much for listening to A Journey to an ESOP. This podcast is really designed to help educate business owners that are not currently an ESOP, but really have an interest in looking at them as possible or potential succession and exit strategies, either in the near term or in the long term. The podcast is also really designed to displace the wrong notions that are really in the marketplace about ESOPs as sometimes being too complicated or sometimes being really costly and different things that are out there. I also find that there are a lot of wrong notions about the process. And so just all of those things I think are important that we want to cover in this idea of like a journey to an ESOP. If you like what you hear at the end of the podcast, please share it with a friend. So the title of this, the first episode, is called Enough Information to be Dangerous. And I got the idea of doing this podcast from just in the years gone by of going to different conferences and dealing with different clients and seeing the frustration and I mean sometimes the confusion or the confusion that causes this frustration in clients. They've got so much information and they have all these different questions. And as you sit down with them and you start unpacking some of their questions, you find that, that the information that they have is good and it's coming from all kinds of very credible sources, but it's in the wrong places and it creates, really some stumbling blocks. So they get stuck in this process of moving through, what I think can be, you know, could very well be a very simple or a very straightforward process. In addition to that, this is the time of year that as ESOP professionals, we're looking at scheduling ourselves out to go to conferences and meeting a lot of people. So, you know, we've really been thinking a lot about, you know, the conferences that we have coming up. And in those conferences, you meet a lot of new business owners that are new to the ESOP process. And so this was really more thinking about what they're going to be experiencing as they go. When a business owner has an idea that they find out about ESOPs, one or two types of people come out of the woodwork. The first type of person is, you know, and this could be friends, advisors, whoever. They come out and they're really just very negative from a really black and white perspective. And their response to the business owner is, nope, way too complicated. You shouldn't do an ESOP. Stay away from them. They might mention ESOPs that they've known and rightly so that they didn't work well. They might look at, hey, it's just too costly. There's a lot of other ways to go about it. And so in those kind of cases, obviously that could either shut the business owner down and say, I'm not going to pursue that until somebody else comes along. So you really should look at that as a strategy. And the other type of people that come out are, you know, again, friends and advisors, people that they know. That say, hey, you should go for it. I've heard ESOPs really be successful, or they had experience with them their own, and they just encourage that that business owner go ahead and go forward on it. And then the next thing is going to come out of that, which is, hey, you should attend one of these conferences because the conferences are very helpful to get information. Now, if you're again new to the world of ESOPs, a lot of the conferences are hosted by either the ESOP Association or the NCEO. And so if you go in and Google those organizations, you're going to find out all kinds of information on the conferences. But in addition to that, once you start Googling ESOPs, you're going to get a lot of articles and there's just a lot of blogs and different things that are written. And so again, there's a lot of information. And even me doing a podcast, here's some more information. But what I'm hoping to do with this first one is really set the stage to help provide some clarity as far as how to use that information. And it's clear to me that the information or the source of information really does come from experts. You know, being an expert at anything takes years and it takes education, it takes a dedication and it takes making mistakes and working through a process. And so year after years and years go by, you know, there are just absolute experts in the area of ESOPs. One thing that happened to me not too long ago, which was really good illustration for me about expertise, is I had in my house these doors that just were breaking down, and they needed to be repaired and actually replaced. And so I hired a company, and they came out, and the guy that did the door repair, his name was Norm. And so when Norm came out, I said, "Hey, Norm." And then I paused, and there was no laughing, but I was kind of thinking of the Norm on Cheers. But he didn't get it. He's very serious minded door repairman, which was good. And when he finished up his work, I said, "Norm, could you look at my front door? Because I had tried to do a repair on the front door, and it wasn't closing, and it was just a problem." So he said, "Oh, sure, I'll take a look at it." And so I'm standing there with him, and in seconds he has the door off, and he's looking at it. He's like, "Oh, here's your problem." Boom, boom. And he fixes it, and he does this whole door repair within, like, say, 5 minutes. And I'm standing there just astonished. I mean, like, you know, wow. I clearly see, like, the ability of somebody to be truly an expert at something that I can see that I truly am not an expert at. So I don't fix doors, but Norm really helped me out that day, and it just kind of made me start thinking about how important expertise is in anything that you do, whether it be in the trades or professional work or whatever. So as I think about the conferences, and I think about the experts that you're going to find, conferences are, in my experience, are just a rush, and they're a rush because there's so many people at conferences. And I remember my first conference that I went to in Minneapolis, and I am from Florida. I've grown up in Florida, and I really don't know anything really about living in the cold. And I remember the conference was so big that, unfortunately, I wasn't able to book my hotel in the main hotel for the conference. So I was several blocks away. And every day, every morning, I had to get up and go walk towards the conference. And I was new to Minneapolis too. So, but I would walk through the cold, and it was freezing, and I had Florida winter clothes on, which are really not winter clothes. It's a Florida sweater is really a sweater that's really light. So I'm freezing walking through, and I finally realized that there's these catwalks that you can take from the hotels that actually will keep you warm the whole time. And once I figured that out, I was good to go, and I started to obviously really, really enjoy what I was doing at the conference. But so I get to the conference, and there's over 1,500 people there, and it's overwhelming. And there's people, they've got badges on, and there's trade show booths, and there's workshops, and in some way, for me, it was just a lot of fun, and it was exciting because I was able to get so much information, and I was so excited to be, you know, with this group of people and doing in this one area where everybody's really so heavily focused on ESOP. So, but I had experience with them before, and it wasn't something I was walking into for the first time. So I'd imagine in that experience for somebody that walks in for the first time, it just has to be overwhelming. And one of the overwhelming parts and pieces of this is, who are all these people? You know, there's people coming up from valuation firms and from attorney offices and trustees, and it's just like this mad rush of people that you're talking to. And then when you go to the workshops, they talk about a lot of very high level things, and sometimes just beyond, like, what are you really saying? And then they're using expertise language, and it's almost like a foreign language, and you're like, what are you saying? What are you talking about? And so you're trying to, like, listen and take notes. I would imagine that for some business owners, and maybe their teams that go, they get back to the office and they debrief on all that information, and maybe they make sense out of it, and they figure out what they need to do, and they get good contacts, and all those contacts can really help them. But I would imagine for some people, and this is really my, not just imagination, I've experienced this with some new clients, is this idea that these are the things that happen with too much information. So the whole title of this was, you know, enough information to be dangerous. So some of the dangers that I see are that you get overwhelmed, and what do I do with all this information? And then the whole process itself, and what I mean by process is moving it from where you are right now towards a step towards what you would be if you're trying to make this ESOP thing work. And so I see is delay happens because so much information is there the business owner just stops and delays and delays and delays. And then maybe a year goes by and another year goes by. And they get older and older, and they're getting closer and closer to this real need, which becomes more of a sense of urgency than it really should be. So one rule of thumb of just business planning itself is 5 years is a good window. 5 years is a healthy, nice space of time to conceptualize maybe all things in succession and exit planning that are possible for a business, and then lay out some groundwork at the front end to determine whether or not the ESOP is actually a right vehicle for you. There might be things in that 5-year window that really do need to be worked out before you get into that that time frame that we're going to get into, which is start and finish the ESOP process. There might be things you want to work on within the strengthening the valuation, or bringing on some key people, or getting into some new markets. We've had situations where we wanted to consolidate some entities and all those things. So 5 years is just really comfortable. But when delays happen, you start losing that planning time period. The second danger happens, and I just would call it, again, the business owner is so overwhelmed, I would call it a real loss of continuity in planning. And so parts and pieces get picked up, and then they get put down, they get picked up, and they get put down, so that the effect of all that is that there's just this scattered type of planning where it zigzags, and it's confusing, not just to the business owner, but maybe the management team that's involved. If it's confusing maybe to the employees that might be involved as well, or it's confusing to the banks and the bonding companies or anybody else in that's affected by this business. So, you know, really to avoid scattered planning and come back to that rule of thumb of you know, having a good number of years to plan accordingly, it's important to be able to organize this information and put it in the right place. So the third, I would say, danger of having, you know, enough information to be dangerous is this idea that sometimes you come back from a conference or you get all this information from people, and there's this sense of pressure to start engaging professionals to do stuff. And it logically, it makes sense. And this is the business owner that has, hey, they're more of a decision maker and not as much of a procrastinator. And so in that kind of personality, like, hey, we're doing this, let's get it done. And then, you know, it makes sense to them, or at least they think it makes sense to them. But the problem with that and the danger is they might have hired the wrong person to do things. So they may even have engaged a trustee way early in the process than they should have, because they didn't even know what they were getting into. So here's retainer money going out, engagement fee money going out, and now they're into the process and they need to go all the way back to the beginning. And so they've wasted not only maybe some money, but they've also wasted time in the process. So again, those are just kind of like, they're at the very outset, just what I would say are dangers of having so much information. So the rest of the podcast, what we're going to do is we're going to focus on trying to organize that information by really to scale everything back to what I'm going to call a pre-ESOP timeline. And the pre-ESOP timeline is going to help us understand who is helping during what parts of that timeline, so that what information you do get at conferences or that you read, you're trying to put it into perspective of the timeline. And just as there's a pre-ESOP timeline, there's also a post-ESOP timeline. There's also what happens after the ESOP. And so some of the information that you're going to get, you're going to want to make sure that you put in the right category. And it may end up applying more towards the post-ESOP as opposed to the pre-ESOP. For example, a lot of the repurchase liability discussions around ESOPs really belong more on the post-ESOP side. And so as we pick up information, we're going to want to be able to put it in the right place. So the first step of the timeline is what I would call the goals and objectives of the owners. This is the conceptual planning. And sometimes this happens just internally with the business owner and maybe their team of people, maybe even their existing professional team. That could include their attorney, that could include their banker, that could include their CPA firm. And so the business owner is like, this is what I want the succession and exit plan to look like. And so they're getting feedback from everybody they can think of. If they're serious about doing a ESOP, then I would highly recommend that they use a deal advisor. a professional deal advisor that has experience in working through the whole process to get those ideas down and to understand what life looks like as an ESOP company. And so given their goals and objectives, and one comes to mind right away is, I had a client who one of their goals and objectives was they wanted to work in the business for the rest of their life. And they felt like if they sold the business to somebody else, that that wasn't a reality for them. And so it's not a financial goal, but it was a goal that was very important to that person. And we were able at the very front end of the deal advising goal and objective session to identify this was a possibility. This ESOP was a possibility of meeting the goal and objective at the front end. The second phase is going to move into the valuation, or what I would say the calculation of value. This calculation of value is going to need to be done by some type of deal advisor that has valuation experience and that understands the way that ESOPs are valued with the in accordance with the recommendations of the Department of Labor. And primarily that's going to be centered around a discounted cash flow model, which in future episodes we'll go into more detail on that. But again, this might be the same deal advisor you started off with. Most likely it is, but that's the deal advisor. So if you meet deal advisors at these conferences, they should be able to help you with that portion of the timeline. The next thing is going to be moving into the feasibility model. So once you have the value range of the business that would be contemplated as sold into an ESOP company or being converted into an ESOP company, now you're ready to determine exactly the structure of that ESOP, the cash flow, the taxes, it's a C-Corp, S-Corp environment. What's the percentage of sale of the company? How would that actually work with the existing payroll? All of those questions and more would be dealt with in the feasibility. That needs to be done by a professional deal advisor that understands ESOPs and that can guide the client through the process of understanding all of the aspects of their goals and objectives, the value range, and then putting it all together to make it make sense. Once those first three phases are completed, at the end of that, the deal advisor should be guiding their client into what I would call an ESOP strategy. And the ESOP strategy is going to incorporate everything that included their goals and objectives, but what you're going to accomplish at the end of this, at this strategy. Because that ESOP strategy is going to really lead into the actual plan going forward. Now, in the timeline, the natural next step, if everything is good and the client's still ready to move forward, is going to be now there's going to be a team of people that are going to need to be hired. And that's going to include an independent transaction trustee. They will end up engaging a business appraiser or evaluation firm. And they may also engage an attorney to represent the trustee. Now, on the other side of it, which is the business owner side and their deal advisor, they are going to also engage an attorney to be the one that writes the ESOP document plan. And so once that team is assembled and those engagement letters are done and all that stuff's happening, then from an efficiency standpoint, due diligence needs to start as soon as possible. And due diligence is going to normally be led by the trustee and their business valuation firm. And they're going to lead off with a list of items in that due diligence phase. So in keeping with all getting all your information figured out, that checklist is a very important checklist. And it's something that the deal advisor should be talking about at the very front end of the process. Because you don't want to be scrambling around looking for items on that checklist in the middle of due diligence. And so preparing a data room through the first few phases of the actual project is very important, so that that's ready to go, so due diligence can be handled efficiently and effectively. So once due diligence is done, and again, that is primarily handled by the client with the deal advisor, and then on the other side, the trustee and his team with the business valuation firm. And they're completely done with the process. Now we're ready to go through the next phase, which is negotiation. So then now the deal is negotiated, And again, the deal advisor is going to be consulting and really quarterbacking this whole process with the business owner on the negotiation so that specific items can be truly addressed. And these items should have already been addressed within the ESOP strategy very at the front end. And that's going to include their idea of what the value is. It's going to include what they think the seller financing or bank financing is going to look like. It's going to include what the board structure is. If there is seller financing, what the notes are, and just various things like that. There are other things that will be contemplated in that. But once that is negotiated on both sides, then there is like a final term sheet that's done. And that means documents can be prepared. And that document plan is going to take the attorney that we talked about earlier on to write the documents. That'll include the ESOP plan documents, that'll include the promissory notes and any other items of record that need to be published in the documents that then will be reviewed by the trustee and then again the deal advisor and his client. Once the documents are approved, then everything is ready to go to closing, and then it's just a matter of signatures. And then that brings us all the way to the completion of the what I call the pre-ESOP timeline, from very beginning of goals and objectives all the way through the process to completing it, as now a new ESOP company is born out of that closing. And then you can get into other things with post-ESOP. So I hope that helps when you look at all of the different aspects of people. Now, in addition to what I mentioned in the pre-ESOP timeline, you're also going to meet in these conferences people that do third-party administration, or companies that do third-party administration, absolutely important to be involved in. Sometimes involved in that whole pre-ESOP timeline, but especially once you become an ESOP company, they're going to be very important to make sure that they keep the records correctly and the participant statements. In addition to that, there are investment advisor groups that are going to be there that want to manage the whole qualified retirement plan, which we'll get into later, but which would be that if you're going to do a 1042 exchange and defer your taxes on capital gains. So the investment people are at these conferences. There are going to be CPAs at these conferences that do tax advice. And so the deal advisor, if they don't have an attached tax firm with them, which is how we are structured, then they're going to need the CPA firm to do some tax planning alongside during that pre-ESOP timeline. And then there are banks at the ESOP conferences as well, and there are ESOP advisory groups within the bank that help look at those transactions and whether or not they can finance them. And so their role is to figure out the lending side. And then typically the bank is going to have its own counsel as well, or its own legal team. So I hope that as you look at the pre-ESOP timeline, those main roles and responsibilities of those professional experts are really critical to the whole process. But again, when I look at what they know collectively, they know a lot, and they can be very confusing when you're talking to so many different people, and just being able to sort through that, I hope really helps you to put that into its right compartments, so that process makes more sense when you go to your conferences this year. So with that, I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for listening to the first episode of Journey to an ESOP. I hope you found it to be helpful. And if you do like it, please share it with a friend and look for the next episode. Thank you so much.